Bound by illusions. Are we bound by illusions? It seems as though we are bound by illusions. And these illusions are illusions of our choice. Illusions that we think are very important, that we think are the most wonderful things in the world. And we are bound by them because they're what we think are important. And as long as we think they're important, then that's what they're going to be. That's exactly what they're going to be. And we must arrive at a level higher than them. We must arrive at a level beyond them to leave those illusions behind. Now, there's nothing wrong with illusions. There's nothing wrong with any of these things at all. The only thing that becomes a problem is the problem of giving them life and giving... Thank you very much, Sylvia. Appreciate that. If you had stayed up there like that, that would have blocked it too. The sunlight is coming through the curtains there. So we're bound by these illusions, and we want to remain in these illusions. I was talking to the young man and his wife who were just taking our pictures a little while ago. And they're from Minnesota, and they're from Mound, which is right next to Orno, which is right next to where Andromeda was. And they knew Andromeda, and they knew the Lunds, Russ and Barbara Lund. Yeah. And they asked my name. My name's Byerly. And they said, oh, you're Byerly. Oh, my mother stops at your stores, you know, because the Byerly food market is larger than the Lund food market up in Minneapolis. And she says, oh, you're the owner of the Byerly food stores up there. Oh, my, I must tell my mother I met you, you know. I said, no. I said, I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and we're a different branch of the Byerly family. And but he gave her a momentary hyper, you know. It's like meeting a president of a country or something, you know. And then you come back down to the realization that it was not. But anyhow, so we had a charming chat and exchanging names back and forth of people that we knew commonly. And she knew one of my very special students, Eileen Peterson, who was a model. And she and her husband lived over on another of the thousand lakes up there. And she came down to meal meditations, and she was there the Christmas that I shot the picture of the cross with the sun directly behind it. Mm. And made that very startling picture for the front of one of our gists. Mm. And we made photographs of it, too, which are quite beautiful. But these are just illusions. Now, she said, he had the timidity to say to me, I just know their kids. I don't know the parents. In other words, I'm another generation down the line. And when I mentioned a date or two, he said, I wasn't born yet. And, you know, it's very interesting how we presume people are what we are just because they're human beings. I don't personally look at people and think that they are a certain age. I look at people and see everyone just like I am. Mm-hmm. I see everyone having had the same experiences I have, the same age I have, the same wonderful life that I've had. And when they don't, it surprises me. Like, he didn't know Brian Hagfors, who was at Andromeda, and he was the president of our youth group and a very fine young man, and he was always over helping me at Andromeda. But they didn't know that. And I was bound by the illusion that whatever I am is out there. Now, they tried to tell me that whatever I am is not out there. But in truth, it is, because they probably are the relatives of students of mine from Andromeda. And their mother had been at Andromeda, and their mother married someone whose name was different than her name, and so therefore their name would be different from the name that I would remember. But it's all a small and a wonderful world. And it's a world filled with illusions, and we're bound by them. We're totally bound by the idea of these illusions. Now, do we want to be bound by these illusions? What is an illusion, for instance? The illusion that you have white skin. The illusion that you have black skin. I have a very big difficulty in that area because I cannot see a white person or a black person. I see everybody just as a person. And so when I am among black people, who many of our students are, I find it very difficult to think of them as black. And none of our students have the timidity to say something like this, but some other people I've heard say it, well, I'm black, so I'm limited. And our students don't say that at all. They say, I'm black and I'm beautiful. And I say, yes, that's very true. But I said, I don't even notice that you're black. And I think a beautiful illustration of that is Dolores Cheeks. Dolores Cheeks was teaching down in Zimbabwe, and it's a black part of Africa where it's very, very, very black. And Dolores is fairly black, but she is from Guyana in South America, and she is a very educated lady. She's a teacher, as you know. All of you met her, I believe. And she teaches in Montreal, Canada. She went down to Zimbabwe, and she was teaching in Zimbabwe, and as she was teaching these classes, the children just loved her, as they all do, and one of the teachers came up and said, white lady, white teacher, hey, white teacher, and she looked surprised, and so she said to one of the other teachers, why are they calling me a white teacher? And she says, I'm not white. She says, but you teach white. When the white teachers are down here, they come from a different culture. They come from a culture, the British culture, or the Canadian culture, or the English American culture, whatever. And so they are white by culture, not by color. And I thought that was a very promising idea, to be white by culture and not by actual color. So that was a boundary that they had overcome. The black people were thinking of her as a culture and not as a color, because if they thought of her as a color, she'd be very close to their own. But this is so beautiful. This is so beautiful. It's a breaking of these boundaries. Now, how many boundaries have you broken? I think in our discussion between the last lecture and right now, and during the last lecture, we had some very interesting comments about death and life and responsibility and practitioner. And I don't think we talked about it on the tape, but the world is bound by the concept that Jesus was a practitioner, that Jesus was a practitioner of Christianity. Well, he was a practitioner of Christianity, but he was not a practitioner of healing. And we're bound by the thought that Jesus heals, you know, and Jesus saves. And Jesus said, hey, I'm not doing any of that. But it's the Christ in me, which is in you, that heals and saves and does these things. But it's not me, Jesus, the man, that does it. So get off my back. Well, people like to hang on something. They like to hang on a boundary that gives them strength and gives them a feeling of belonging, a feeling of that this is something that works. And we, in our discussion, were saying Jesus was not a practitioner. Because, all right, Stefan, would you like to explain why Jesus was not a practitioner?
He was teaching how to be a practitioner to the people when he said, it is done unto you according to your belief. He let the individual be his own healer, his own practitioner.
I mean, all the people he talked to, he was teaching him how to be a practitioner.
Yes.
Why would you say that? Didn't he heal anybody?
Because he let it up to the individual for them to heal themselves. And that's why some succeeded and some presumably didn't.
What about all those miracles that he did?
The miracles like making
wine out of water.
That's when he was dead.
There he was doing it for himself, actually, which he always does.
Because his mother ordered him to.
But there was nobody else involved, really.
That's right.
Lazarus
raising from the dead. Well, what did he do?
Sleep.
He said he only sleeps. He's only sleeping.
So he didn't heal because he saw.
And then he says, Lazarus, come forth. Mm. Now, was that a healing act, saying Lazarus, come forth?
That could be either way, actually.
No,
he may in fact have only been sleeping, or he may have cloaked his... He was smelly?
Yeah.
Well, he was just playing the alarm clock.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The alarm clock, that's good.
Waking him up.
And the little... And the little girl who was dead and lying there, and Jesus went in and said, do you believe that she can be healed, that she can be risen? And the mother says, yes, 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 you can do anything, you know, yes.
Now, there where he was a catalyzer.
Yeah.
Yeah, there actually the mother was convicted it would happen, mm-hmm. So it did.
Mm-hmm.
I think he just wanted to demonstrate that these things can be done.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, the individual, does it.
Because that's what he said. What I do, you can do, and even greater things.
Mm.
It is done unto you according to your belief, sort of thing, yeah. Mm. Now, why is this so contrary to what the Christian church is going around talking about? I mean, this Jesus said it right out, and he said it again and again and again.
They want to worship him.
Because they want to keep their congregation and not take them... Take the congregation their own responsibility.
Mm.
Otherwise, if they would, they would not have...
They wouldn't need the church, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the power they have.
The church wouldn't have the power.
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's right. Well, this is in the early days, the priests read the Bible and told the people what they wanted them to hear. The people did not have a Bible to read. There were no Bibles for the people to read. And the people, if they had a Bible, couldn't read anyhow. They didn't know how to read. Reading was not something that they could do. So this, you know, would be taking the power away from the church. And it's just like the tithing. What was the reason for tithing in the Old Testament? Just tell me anything that comes to your mind.
So that the priest had something to
maintain. No. Be more positive about it. What was the reason for tithing in the Old Testament?
Okay, to maintain.
Pay their sins.
Huh?
Their salary.
Pay for their sins.
No. The reason for tithing in the Old Testament was that there were periods of drought and there were periods of abundance. And when they filled the storehouse with their tithe every year, in the period of drought, they had food to feed to the people who didn't have it.
Oh.
That was really what it was. That was what the Pharaohs had taught, and that's what they did. That's what the early Hebrews were practicing. But the thing is, it got misconstrued. It was thought to be only for the priests and only for the church to use. And you see, it lost its significance. Its earlier significance was very valid, you know, very reasonable. And this is why the government, the Pharaoh, the rulers, attempted to have them do that. But later, the priests used it as their wealth, their personal wealth, and the priests could go and do anything they wanted to do, the Hebrew, the rabbis and what have you. And this is not knocking them. I mean, it had a good thing going, you know, and the people believed in it, so what the heck? Play the game if people want to play it. I don't say that that's what we would do. But that's what its purpose was. So now, if Jesus was not a practitioner, what did he? How did he teach people to be practitioners?
By saying, it is done unto you according to your belief.
And that's kind of tough. Did he teach them what kind of belief to have?
To go within.
Yes.
Ask and you shall receive. Knock and shall be opened.
Seek and you shall find. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what he taught them. And that's only the beginning. The Ten Commandments were the old ones. What new commandment did he give to them?
Love your neighbor like yourself. And
love the Lord thy God with all thy heart and all soul. And God is within. And love your neighbor like yourself. So however you love this God that you are. But he said the kingdom of God is within every man. You see, he was giving all of that stuff. So now, why is it that we're bound by the illusion that Jesus goes around healing and raising people and things like that?
We don't.
I'm sorry?
We do not go.
No. I mean humanity.
Ah. Well, for the fact, like Stefan said, because people don't want to take responsibility.
Okay. Now, what is it that people happen when they come to us or to any New Thought religions that are Christocentric but who are not Jesus worshippers?
Well, they learn to take responsibility for
right.
themselves, to use the law of cause and effect.
Which is what Jesus taught.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And why don't we follow the Hebrew faith, or why don't we follow the Hindu faith, or the Buddhist faith, or any others? Why don't we follow them? Islamic.
It all says the same thing. The power is within.
No. In each teaching is the same thing.
Yeah.
But the illusions that surround the teaching are what get the teaching all messed up.
Mm-hmm.
What in the Islamic teaching do we find unacceptable?
That they put down the women. And
that they put down the women and children. But this is something that their culture has had for hundreds and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that we cannot feel bad about them doing, but it's just not acceptable. Now, what is it that the War Crimes Committee does and searches out in nations that have wars between each other?
Crimes against women and children.
Crimes against humanity. Where they did not give fair trials to the men, and crimes against women and children, and where they the women and children are not the worst thing in a war. They have the hardest time, but it's they take the men and they just shoot them. And they bury them, and the women and children. But it's crimes against humanity. This is what the war crimes is so seriously involved with, because they do not want man to be inhumane to man. And this could happen whether it is Americans, English, Germans, French, Italian, Chinese, Japanese, doesn't matter what nation you have. Any of them could equally be found guilty of that sort of thing. And they're found guilty of that because there's one little factor that they do, and they judge. When a person is taken prisoner of war, is that person a German or an American or an Englishman or anything? They're nothing. They are without nation. They are a prisoner of war. You treat them as a prisoner of war, not as a terrible German or a terrible Jap or a terrible American. You treat them as a prisoner of war. This is what they do. You see, now, this humanity is good, but why do we have to do that? Why do we have to do that to the English army, to have them treat their prisoners of war as prisoners? Why do we have to have the Germans treat the Americans as prisoners of war when they take them as prisoners of war, or the Japanese as prisoners of war by Americans or by the Japs? Why do we have to emphasize that? Can anyone tell me? Because of the anger in the heart of the conqueror.
Mm-hmm.
And the anger, perhaps their mother, their families were killed. Mm-hmm. Perhaps their best friends were killed and stuff like that. And so then they say, it doesn't matter if we kill the enemy, who is now a prisoner of war, even though once they become a prisoner of war, they become persona non grata. They have no personality. They are living under the protection of the nation that has conquered them. But what happens? What happens is that all of these things are things that have to be taught, because there's a lack of that personality, or the lack of that teaching that takes place, which is love your neighbor like yourself, which is do unto others as you'd have them do unto you, which is honor your mother and your father. These are all children. These are all people that are to be not necessarily honored for what they did, but honored as human beings. Why does a person try to save another person when they don't know them? Why does a person try to be heroic and save a person from a burning house or a car that might start on fire any minute, or from walking in front of a car at the jeopardy of their own life and their own safety? You see, man's natural instinct of survival would make man always want to be good to his fellow man. But when judgment comes in, then that's why Jesus said, "Judge not, lest you be judged." When the judgment comes in, then we say, they're terrible Japs because they bombed Pearl Harbor. And they killed all these people without warning, and we weren't even at war with them, and they did this. They're terrible, you know. And it's self-righteousness and stuff. But, hey, they're now prisoners of war. They're now nobody. They're not Japs. They're not this. They're not that. You understand? Mm-hmm. And our lack of humility, our lack of humanity, our lack of divinity allows us to feel that they should be made to suffer because of what they did. And this, and that's what our prisons do. Our prisons are set up to make people suffer for what they did instead of training them into a new way of thinking, a new way of life, and getting them started on being useful citizens. Well, these things happen. This is not what Jesus taught. This is an illusion that we want to at least release from our life. I don't say that you have to release that illusion from your life. I say I have to release that illusion from my life, because I can never judge another. What can I only do? I can only give them unconditional love. And so long as I give them unconditional love, then I am doing my thing to my highest and my best. And I don't owe anybody anything. I don't have to do anything, but I do have the responsibility of being unconditionally loving to my enemy, to my friend, to my neighbor, to my parent, to anybody in my world. I am unconditionally loving, because that is the condition of my divinity. Makes sense? Mm-hmm. So this is something very important for us to consider. In Us He Lives fits that pattern very nicely. But we want to really get past the Jesus, past the man, past the teachings that he gave, and into living the philosophy, which expands far beyond the teachings that he gave. The philosophy sometimes is lost because the teachings get confused. And the teachings get confused because they were written by diverse people long after the expression that Jesus made of those teachings. But how could these different four guys, if you want to call them that, write down all those things that Jesus had said and stand up for those things? How could they do that? How could they have known? It was 50, 60 years after Jesus had passed on. Now, if the normal lifespan of people at that time was 30, 35 years, those people weren't even born when this was going on. They weren't even alive, and they knew nobody, because the people, by the time they would have talked to some people, would have long been dead if they had been first person on the job circumstances. I mean, this is not something we are making up. This is just a fact. They lived to be 30, 35 years of age. That was the age. There were a few older ones, but most of them were that. Where does all this information come from? It comes from the same source that Paul got it. Where did Paul get it?
Within
himself. Very interesting, isn't it? So, we have all these boundaries of illusions that are built up around us. And these boundaries are ones that we have empowered again and again and again to be over us. And we want to unempower them. We want to take away the power that allows them to continue to exist. And the only thing that will take away the power that allows an illusion to exist is to know the truth. Know the truth, and the truth sets you free. So, what is the truth about a practitioner? And Stefan, have you said that already, or would you like to say what the truth is about a practitioner?
A practitioner sees himself whole and perfect, and then he sees his creation whole and perfect.
Now that is totally and completely what it is, right? That's the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Why don't you have other ramifications to it?
Like what?
Like anything. The answer is you don't have any other ramification because that says it all. Yes. Does it say it all?
Yes. In wholeness and perfection, everything is included.
Right. It says it all. And you see, the trouble with us is that we want to get so complex. Things are very simple, and we want to make them complex, because if it's complex, then we can have an excuse for making mistakes. But when it's simple, you have no excuse for making a mistake. Now, what is it to be yourself? Christina, what does it mean to be yourself and have fun for you? Yeah, do the things you like to do.
Yeah.
Be yourself and have fun.
Yeah, to have fun what I do and like what I do. And
you might add this here, which is not necessary to add. You are untouched by the opinions of others about what you do. See, that's an important point, but it's a negative point, and so therefore it's not really necessary. But it's good for us to think about. We're untouched by what other people think we should do. We're untouched by what our parents think we should do. We're untouched by what our world thinks we should do. Now, does the world basically disagree with us?
Mm-mm.
Not at all, do they? The world basically agrees with us. If you say that you're number one, the world says, that's right. If you say that you like to have fun, the world says, that's right. We all like to have fun. Eat, drink, and be merry. Isn't that one of the slogans of the world? Eat, drink, and be merry. So this is not a joke. This is not. You see, what does the world, what is the best medicine?
To laugh.
Huh?
To laugh.
To laugh. Laughter is the best medicine you can have. And what is the best drink that you can have to help you laugh?
Cream soda.
Huh?
Cream soda.
Cream soda. You like it, huh?
Root beer.
It is good, isn't it? Yeah. Well, wine. Wine is what they love to have. They have made wine from the beginning of time. Not because it is going to make you drunk, but because it sort of loosens your inhibitions. It makes you feel less critical of other people. Of course, some people it makes more critical. But most people it makes less critical because they're mellow. They're untouched. It sort of gets rid of some of their inhibitions, sometimes too many. But most of the time, it just sort of shades over those inhibitions. But that's a happy time, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
When is the happy hour, Anita? Irene?
5 o'clock.
Yeah, why 5 o'clock? Irene, why 5 o'clock?
Yeah, after work.
And where do you go immediately after work?
To the pub.
To the pub. And they have happy hour at the pub, right?
Yeah.
What were we going to say, Gertrude?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they have happy hour for an hour or two. TGIF. Half price drinks, huh?
So you go to TGIF.
TGIF, right. Thank God it's Friday. And you can drink at half price, and they serve, what do they serve?
Hors d'oeuvres.
Yeah, they serve hors d'oeuvres by the ton.
Aperitif.
And you don't even want to go home. Mm. You know, that'd make a lot of
chips and nuts.
Chips and nuts.
And then you drink more.
That's right. And little legs, you know, of chicken, and all sorts of stuff. But, you see, it's a happy hour. And it's named... It's about the happy hour now. It's named the happy hour because it's a time when you forget your troubles. And is that good to forget your troubles? Very good, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's because then you're cool. You know, you have given your troubles a show. Why not forget your troubles totally? Well, because it doesn't work that way, does it?
Yes,
you're married. And you got a husband or a wife, you know. or your troubles might be your children, or your troubles might be your boss or your job. But people who love their job, do they usually go to happy hour?
No, they're already
happy. They're already happy. They go home to their families. People who have happy, unhappy family relationships, do they like happy hour?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another excuse to stay away from their families. But people who are happy with their job and their family never go to happy hour. They haven't time to spend away from their work or their family. They want to be with them. They want to enjoy them. Now, you see, this is a barrier that society builds up, and it is legalized. This is the interesting thing. Happy hours are legalized. It's legal to drink. It's legal to have heavy whiskeys and scotches and all that kind of good stuff, you know. It's legal to do that. And it's legal to smoke cigarettes. And it's legal to, it's legal for prostitution, too. All these things are legal. Now, what if they made them illegal? Now, what if they didn't charge any taxes on that stuff? What if they didn't make it so expensive and just let people have all they wanted? What would happen?
They didn't want it anymore.
It's available, too easily available. They wouldn't search after it as much. You say, well, oh, they sure would. I know that, yeah. No, they wouldn't. It's a psychologically proven thing. If you put a lot of wonderful things on your hors d'oeuvre table, shrimp, lobster, and all that kind of stuff, the first thing the people go to is what?
The traditional things.
Yeah, which?
The peanut butter.
The peanuts. No, the peanuts.
Peanuts,
yeah, peanut butter for us, yeah. But peanuts and chips,
yeah,
and popcorn. They don't go for the little pieces of chicken. They'll maybe go to for them, and they'll get eaten up, but they don't put that much out there because they know that's not a heavy eater. And they don't put a lot of lobster and shrimp tails and stuff like that. They don't do that because people are not really interested. They want to just stuff volume down their tummy. And they know that if they eat a few shrimp and lobster or little chicken and legs and stuff, they that won't satisfy them, that makes them feel greasy. So they eat the other stuff. The good stuff is there, and they pay big money for the good stuff in the restaurant, but they don't eat it there. They say a lot of people do, some people do, that's true, but the majority don't. So really, if all these other things were readily available, they wouldn't do it. If I taught you how to hypnotize yourself, so that you could click your finger and then it would put you into hypnosis and you would instantly be able to do your day's work in about 20 minutes. And then you could have the whole rest of the day to do anything you want. Would you do it? No. You say yes. No, but you wouldn't do it because you need to have something need you during the day. You would be bored stiff. The mass of humanity would be bored stiff if they had nothing to do. You know that. The reason that we have such high populations in the world is that people want to have something to do during the day. Because if they go home, all they do is have children, you know. If they go home, they don't go out and play games. They don't go and take their canoes in the lake and different other things. But they watch television or something. They have to do something. When a man retires, what's the first thing he does? He puts his chair in front of the television set and he settles down for the rest of his life. He doesn't go out and make the garden all the more beautiful because he wished he had time to do that.
Not the Americans. They buy a motorhome and they travel around.
There are a lot of motorhomes on the road, that's true. But not that many. But I'm giving you a general principle. So these are illusions, and these are the illusions that bind us, and we want to get ourselves unbound by these illusions. So what's the best way to be unbound by the illusion of alcohol, of drugs, of sex, of eating, of happy hours, of things that would cause us to be taken away from our work or our family or our life that we think is happy. Or why is it important for us to have a family and a work? Did you want to talk about that for a minute? Greg, is it important for us to have a job? I mean, you know, just from the general idea.
General idea, yes.
As an ideal situation. Would the Atlantean have a job?
No.
No. No, I mean, you said general, I meant just humanity now.
Yeah.
From that point of view, yes.
What would the
attitude like a normal attitude, it is important.
He'd be what?
If you have a normal human being, it's an attitude, it is important.
It is important to have a job. It is not important.
It depends on our attitude. It depends on the attitude of the person.
I agree, but what would be the normal attitude of people if they didn't have to have a job? Would they have a job?
They didn't have one.
Sure.
Yeah, I think so.
If they didn't have to have it, would they go and get one?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they were bored.
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
They have to do something. Let's look at it this way, too. Christina, what would happen if you took the television away?
I would be happy.
Yeah, I know you would. But I mean from humanity.
Yeah, they would be bored.
They'd be bored. They have nothing to divert their attention. Nothing to take their attention away from the things that are boring. And then they'd have to either... Well, hey, now... You just said a very important thing. Think about this. In Jesus' time, the life expectancy was 30 years. What did Jonathan Livingston Seagull say about life? The reasons that seagulls die so young and so forth is what?
Boredom and anger.
Boredom, fear,
and
what?
And anger.
Boredom, fear, and anger. Now, why would anyone become bored? Why would anyone become angry? That's another thing too. Why do we have wars? Because nobody has anything to do. And why do a lot of people become mercenaries? You know what a mercenary is?
Yes, sir.
What is a mercenary?
A soldier.
A what?
A soldier that is paid.
A paid soldier, right. A soldier who hires himself out to go and fight other people's wars. And so he becomes a Frenchman, or he becomes a German, or he becomes whatever country's having a war, you know. Fortunately, those countries are not involved right now, or ever will be again. But why do people do that? Because they're bored. Because they're bored. And why do people climb mountains? Because they're bored. They don't climb mountains because it's a lot of fun. They climb it because they have to have something to do. Now, what if they were to climb the mountain and just have a good time going up the mountain? Not rush, but just have a good time. Why not go up the mountain on the nicest day of the year instead of the day when it's, you know, wind blowing and snow and cold and blizzardy and stuff like that?
People like the challenge.
Well, you're not thought to be a man unless you have bared the challenge. And of course, now women are doing it too. And they're showing that it's not man, it is mankind, you know, that needs the challenge. How would we handle something like that for ourselves? What is it that would make the University of Healing a more viable organization throughout the world?
Feeling. When I am feeling fulfilled, then also I see that fulfillment in the operation of the university.
What would people think of the university or of us if every one of us were charismatically fulfilled within ourselves?
That's the best advertising.
We are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Marketing.
That's marketing. Oh, you betcha. That's marketing. That's the best kind of marketing. And
living example.
Yeah, living example. Well, now, I don't think any of you will appreciate this remark, but it's true. When Ingeborg gets on the broadcast band and she starts talking, you would think that she is the most dynamic woman in the world. You must hear her. I think we should all tune in sometime when she's doing her thing.
Sure.
It would be.
She knows it.
Huh?
Yeah. That she knows
no,
it.
Not that she knows it. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because she just thinks everybody's listening to her. But she gets in there. I come in and out, you know, when I'm doing different things. She's talking in Italian, so I don't know what she's saying, but I have an idea how she's saying it. And I think to myself, man, is she putting something across? And she's so powerful and sincere and not dogmatic as I can see, but maybe dogmatic. But she's really putting something across. And I can just imagine the people out there saying, go, go, girl, go, you know, you're wonderful. Because people like to be told things, you know. People like to have somebody really get in there and tell them the facts of life.
Yeah, she can do that.
And she can do that, all right.
I speak some Italian.
But look, her friend who paid her even $10 to her neighbor friend because she was such a...
I mean, she certainly gives something special. Something special. And we don't see in each other the diamonds that are really there because our own are sparkling so fully. But
thank you. Life is so overwhelming. Huh?
Yeah. But if we did see them, we would be very delighted and amazed. And I mean, it's fantastic. It's fantastic. But this is great. This is great. This is being unbound by these illusions. Because now all the time that Ingeborg has been with us, she's been a good lady, and she's worked hard, and she's been tough and not tough and everything. But we've never seen her on the internet. We have never seen her get turned on by a microphone. In fact, I didn't know that she liked to talk before people. But when she gets that microphone in her hand, and she's waving that thing around, and she's talking, she is having the time of her life, and I think it's so wonderful. I would not take it away from her for nothing, even if she were saying dumb things. And I'm sure she's saying good things, you know what I mean?
She has a unique philosophy.
Yeah. But there are so many people out there who are ministers of God Unlimited.
And have a unique philosophy.
Who are so far from what we teach that Ingeborg is right online. And I think this is just wonderful. I'm just so delighted. But she is
she's a tiger.
Released from the boundaries of illusion. And I think that's a glorious thing. And we should be released from the boundaries of illusion. And I'd like to have each one of you take 15 minutes, maybe once a week, and sit on that microphone by yourself if you wish. And just sing or talk or share with people or play your guitar, but do anything you want. Sing joy songs or do anything. Or yodel. Hey, that'd be beautiful. Have 15 minutes of yodeling. Would you like? Maybe not 15 minutes of yodeling, but interspersed with some discussion. And you might... I think if you put Miss Foxima on there, that would be a charming thing, you know? And Bernard, you and Bernard would really come across nice. And the people would hear you very well because the microphone's right in front of Bernard's face, you know. So, but this is being unbound by the illusions that have held us, that have said to us, we can't do things because we can. And we're doing wonderful things and we're just having a ball doing them too. Now, do you have any ideas on how we could be unbound by illusions? Ellen, do you have any ideas how we could be unbound by illusions? What kind of illusions, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Let's say the illusion of ignorance.
Oh. I say, I know that I know that I know.
What?
God in me is the answer.
See, you can't just go saying halfway. Now, you're on broadcast band,
yes.
And they want to hear the whole thing.
I would say when Jesus was 12 years old, he was standing in the temple and teaching, and the people were saying, who is he and where does he get it from, or did he go to school? Well, he was actually the perfect example of a youngster who was listening within and took all the wisdom which he shared with the crowd from within. And when we noted that there is a law of cause and effect, and that our thoughts are things, and our words and actions are nothing else than putting the law of cause and effect into motion, then we know that we don't need even to go to school. We can speak our word and say, I know that I know that I know God in me is the answer.
Right.
And then I say of Diego, who was in school, and he was the last year of the school, and the teacher called him and he said, I want to talk to your mother. I talked, and then I went and I said, what do you want to tell me about my genius San Diego? And they said, hey, I think you have not all your cuckoo, and send me your husband. Now, my husband is very positive, and it was just the right person to send to. And so when Ados came and he said, what do you want to tell me about my genius San Diego? The teacher said, I think I need to change my attitude. So he looked at Diego different, but in the meantime, I had changed my attitude. I had talked to Diego that he is a genius, that he is our son, that he knows it, and that he is good. So there was put a cause into motion, and it manifested, and he passed the class. And today he is a great, great man.
See, you give her a finger and she'll take the whole hand. But that's good. That's good. No, you see, these are the things that make for great stories to put across the idea that we can be free of these boundaries. And Gertrude, how would you say we could be free of boundaries? In what area? What experiences have you had in your life that might lead you to think that we could be free of boundaries? Gertrude?
Huh? Yeah,
Paul. I'm over here. Gertrude?
Yes, up is driving a car, and she said driving the motor home.
Yeah.
Yeah, my whole life I thought I can never drive a car. I'm not able to do this. That's because I created Katharina, who gave me the car, and it was the moment I thought, oh no, I have to do it. I have a car now, and if I would give it away, I would be a little bit ashamed.
Mm-hmm.
And then I took lessons, and I got it, the license.
And you've not been the same since, have you?
No.
You've been footloose and fancy free.
Yeah, that's true. It's changed actually my whole life.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And to drive now with this motorhome, I looked at it today, the lengths and so, that I have done this.
Yeah.
Almost an hour in this traffic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
Trucks on each side.
Yes, it was.
And you were too busy to be frightened.
Yeah, and I know actually I can do more than I, is that mit Zutrauen?
I think I can.
That's
true.
I know.
That you know. And what other illustration have you got of how you have broken a boundary?
Actually, that was also with my son, the both sons, Martin and Adrian. Adrian was very, very, not good in school. And I believed in him. I put him also in a private school, and that he had 2 years. He was a little bit more happy. He could do other things than only what we do in normal school.
Mm-hmm.
And afterward, he comes back. And in the normal school, he was then not good. But I believed in him, and now you can see he has his own business. Mm-hmm. And yeah, actually. Sometimes I say I should write a book about it.
I think so too. And what about Martin?
And Martin with his drug stories.
Yes.
Story. It was also, I could see behind all these things what he has done.
Mm-hmm.
It was heavy for me.
Sure.
And he took money from me and all these things. And but look how it comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
He created even a wife who helped him now to pay back all the money. And yeah, it's
beautiful.
That's a wonderful story.
Well, you certainly are a living example of breaking boundaries.
Yes.
No, thank you.
True.
You're wonderful. Okay. Irene, what would you say about breaking boundaries? Loud and clear.
I think I break every day at least one boundary.
Great.
By changing my attitude, by take moment by moment, and yeah, change my attitude and my responsibility to believe in what I really am. And I think this kind of boundaries I like most.
Do you have any illustration?
No.
Well, you say the spiritual what?
Spiritual, mental kind of things which happen in my life.
Right.
And well, I can say practical experiences like talking or one of the last examples is also broadcasting. I mean, I was good.
Great.
I have the tendency to create always everybody before me, and I have to wait and wait and have the chance to get nervous and more nervous. And it also happened like that. I usually like to do it right away, and then it's done, and
right.
It's great. And now I start to create things that I'm always lost, and I have to wait and train myself not to build up something which is not healthy then, which makes me...
If you're the last, you can always make a conclusion and be the one that's remembered.
Well, if you are a trained speaker, you can, but that's
you are.
Not really the case with me. I'm not trained. I'm not saying I'm not good, but I'm not trained.
Oh, I see.
So, but then this broadcasting, I just sat there and even with trembling knees, but it just bubbled out of me something. And
beautiful.
It was fine. And I'm sure if I would listen to myself, I would be astonished because I have no idea what I said.
That was good.
Did we record it?
Yeah.
Good.
Well, recorded not. We just spoke, right?
I see.
Yes. Everyone was very good.
Yeah.
So, and that's with everything, I guess. If I overcome that, oh no, you know, just jump into it, and I know I just do something, and it's always good and might be
very good, huh?
Could be improved maybe sometimes, I don't know, but for that moment it is perfect.
Well, that's fantastic. And what other illustration do you have to give of that? Any others? Or is that what you have for now?
Well, that's for now, yeah.
Okay. What illustration do you have to give, Sylvie, of how you have broken barriers? Thank you very much.
I'm still breaking. I'm especially working on the barrier of self-confidence and being worthwhile. And self-confidence, I mean, I at the moment I still think there's something to break, and I know there is. But if I think back, I have broken a lot, especially in speaking. Because I remember when I was just shortly here at the University of Healing, I was ordained as a minister, and I had to give a 5-minute talk, and I could almost not talk for 1 minute. I didn't know what to say. I was totally blank and totally unable to organize words. And last year I was speaking in a little church just because they asked me, do you have something to tell us? And I went up there and I talked to them, and I gave a talk in front of 25 people, and I felt free as a butterfly. I was turning around, I was looking at the people, I was laughing, and it was just lots of fun. And that was for me, to think of that, I know that I have broken through big barriers already. Although I'm still, you know, making these swimming movements, getting more freedom and more self-confidence. And
wonderful feeling, isn't it?
It's a wonderful feeling, and I'm looking forward to that breakthrough of that total freedom in me.
Sounds like you're right on the right path.
Okay.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you.
I think it's fun, yeah.
Yeah. Anita, did you give us how you were breaking barriers?
Do I have to tell how it was before then, or can I just say?
Just the barrier you broke.
Okay.
You don't have to give that you broke your leg and then it healed in 2 seconds, you know. But that sounds good too.
Well, okay. If you want to use it as an illustration, you have to.
Yeah, right,
that's
right.
That's true, and you have to tell it. I can start with languages. I love to speak English. That was once a surprise that I would actually ever learn a foreign language. And I think it's just pure fun. And I speak it so easy, I don't think about mistakes anymore. I just do it for the fun of it. Then, whatever I get in my head, I really just practice doing it. I just think about how could I do it, and I do it, and however it turns out, it seems to be okay. Unbound by anything. It's hard to describe. Just nothing holds me back, really. I can do whatever I want. That's really beautiful.
Fun, isn't it? No, thank you. That's very nice. Christina, you already gave us something, didn't you? Or didn't you? What barriers have you broken, Christina?
Is with speaking.
Yes.
When we had the 25th anniversary, I still was shaken that I have to speak, but afterwards I felt it was actually not such a big thing anymore.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, I feel more free. And one big thing is with writing. I feel that when I do something I really like to do, and I just do it for myself and not compare how other people are doing it,
yeah.
And I have in mind it's just for myself, and it's great. I like it. Then it is also good.
That's breaking boundaries.
Yeah.
That's great.
And one big thing is also actually with everyday's activity. I realize that I'm more, that I can speak my word and really say to myself now, hey, stop, I'm happy today, and when I'm determined, it's working out. I mean, then it doesn't matter what I'm doing. I am having fun with it, and that I'm in control of that.
That's super. Thank you. Greg, what boundaries have you broken? So many.
Well, one of them is maybe to kind of include myself in a group of people like this, to study in a school like Garden Limited University, feeling there was kind of a thing I wouldn't have believed myself to be able to do. things like that, then language, like learning, speak different languages, and of course flying. When I made my private license, it was kind of fun,
huh?
Kind of fun. Well, the fun came afterwards, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still, I break the boundary of having the feeling that I couldn't do it, you know.
Right.
And so that was definitely a nice step for me.
That sounds good. Any particular boundary that you broke that seemed to outshine the rest?
Maybe flying, yeah.
Hmm?
Maybe flying, yeah.
Learn to fly, yeah.
Learn to fly, I think it's still the one.
It's probably going to be the one that's going to give you the most happiness all your life, huh?
Who knows?
Maybe, huh?
We'll see.
Okay. All right, thank you. Stefan?
I think for me a boundary that also I cracked is speaking in public, standing before a group of people and feeling confident, feeling good about it.
Good.
That, yeah, when I was a kid or so, that in school or whatever, that was not always the case. So there's definitely a boundary has been removed.
Right.
That may be the most impressive even that I can think of right now.
Well, the boundary of getting up before other people and being yourself and having fun is always a challenge. Bullies hide behind each other, and actors hide behind the part that they play, you know. If they're playing Shakespeare, or they're playing some individual, they hide behind that part, and then they get up. And if you ask them to speak publicly by themselves, they can't do it, because that's a game. And this is what we have learned to do. We have learned to speak without hiding behind a part. Even Miss Faxima, you know, you have been able to speak without Miss Faxima. But I think you should bring Miss Faxima onto the broadcasts. I really do. I think you'd have a lot of fun. Well, my friends, we have arrived at a wonderful point now, and I think each of us have gotten a lot of good out of this. Ellen, you already spoke about yours, didn't you?
About Diego, yes.
Yes, I know about Diego.
Not about my personal problem.
Well, I asked you about your
now
personal
you
breakthrough.
Now you ask me how...
Oh, okay, then please tell us about your breakthrough.
Gosh, this is so much.
What boundaries, the illusions, the boundary of illusion that you've broken through?
To be the president.
Go ahead.
Of the corporation, that was a great...
It was a snap, huh?
Yeah, that was an enormous thing what going on, because I had no idea about business. I didn't know even what a check was. I had no idea about computers, about writing a bill, writing a letter, or writing letters to students. Never done this. And then speaking and going on seminar trips and being in a group of people like ministers and from other churches and still be able to speak, knowing that they were all every Sunday speaking, and not to compare myself and just know it comes from my heart and whatever I say is good, to believe that. And then taking flying lessons, that was just the maximum. That was really the maximum. That I ever flew alone, that I could make, that I did a solo, and that I later on flew alone, made a cross country. That's just, even sometimes when I think of it now, it's just an amazing experience. Flying, then driving the motorhome alone in town, alone, that was something I would have never thought.
Speak your truth alone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And remembering how long you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's quite amazing. I think have a lot of things which not I don't even want to say because.
But they were barriers you broke.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. So well, that's good. That's good. We're not definitive here, but we're general. And so that's good. Well, anything further?
No, I would leave it like this.
Now, Stefan, we got yours, right?
Yes.
Okay. And did we get everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Then it's time for us to bid adieu to our tape disc and get ready for the next step. Thank you. I love you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I love you.